You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to today's episode of Your Ultimate Life. Your Ultimate Life, this dude on the beach, right? Living the ultimate life, laptop lifestyle and all that. Got a great guest tonight. Can't wait to talk to him. Winton Churchill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kellen. Good to see you.
Fabulous to see you, too. Now, I'm going to start in a completely unusual place because nobody can see the name Winton Churchill and not wonder the obvious. So would Winton Churchill please describe an answer to tell the truth? Is there any relation between Winton and Sir Winston Churchill of 70 or 80 years ago fame?
Well, there appears to be. Our family didn't think so. They moved to the Boston area before the United States was the United States, shortly after the Mayflower. And then some of them migrated over into Canada. Some of them went to Minnesota. And so we didn't think we were much related. And of course, with my name sticks out like a sore thumb, I got a call from the Winston Churchill Surname Project, and they were using DNA to trace the Churchill line around the world. And they said, would I be willing to take a test now? This was, 17, 18, 19 years ago. And I said, sure, I'd take the test, not really thinking through all the implications of that. So they sent me the test. I told them I didn't think I'd be related, but, happy to do it. And they came back and said that I had the closest match in, the Y DNA to the reference sample they had from London or from the UK. And so, apparently the relation is the sort of north of Winston Churchill's line. Winston and I both have a common Churchill ancestor. And of course, he's a little older than me. So we're, they call it twice removed or something like that. So.
Yeah. Well, that's all. I wanted to start there because everybody's going to wonder, one, if that's your real name, and two, if you're related to the famous figure of history. So I just thought I'd ask that first.
And the other part of it is I'm a junior. So my dad had this name, and he got the name in 1924, and he was born on a farm in Minnesota, and he was named after a car called the Winton Six. It was the first motorized vehicle to cross the United States from San Francisco to Boston, and it was so that's my grandfather was a car aficionado, and that's how my dad got the name. And Winston was alive, but he wasn't famous in the United States. He was the exchequer, which is basically like the Secretary of the Treasury. And to this day, I'm sure most people on the line do not know who the Secretary of the Treasury is in the UK today, given that we have, CNN and worldwide internet and all that kind of stuff. So kind of a coincidence, as we would say.
Yeah, fun. All right. Well, now that we got that out of the way and have established that you have a royal parentage somewhere back there, that ultra automatically means that you're cool. So
you get
to start from a place of coolness.
Very good.
Today. So I picked this background because it represents some things that you're really interested in. And I know a little about you. And so I'd like you to talk about what you do today. We'll talk about how you got there later.
Okay.
But what is your passion today? Because, we're all about creating the ultimate life, a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy that you create by serving with your gifts.
Yes.
So how are you adding good to the world with your gifts today?
Well, in essence, I help baby boomers and those age 50 plus learn how to take the skills, knowledge, and wisdom they've acquired over decades of usually working in a job or a profession or something like that, and turn that into something that they're able to work online through job and project networks like Upwork. And, you know, it just, it's been quite the amazing experience. I get to talk to fascinating people every day. I've talked to four, I think, today. And I'm just amazed. And and frankly, in a lot of cases, people tend to remember who they are right where they are today, but they don't remember what they've done in their past, and they don't fully understand their skill set. And so we help them figure out which parts of that are most relevant to online work, and then we help them figure out how to go get it.
So that's really interesting. So at this point in your life, how many things have you done that you've forgotten about?
Oh, man, lots. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, we have internal processes and checklists and things to make sure we ask all the questions we need to ask. And somebody will mention something that they did that's just right out of our questions. And I'll say, oh, wow, I did that too. And I hadn't even thought about that. So I'm constantly being surprised by my own decades of buzzing around the planet.
So you have a really rich history of doing things in the tech field, which uniquely qualifies you to be a guru of wizardry in the internet world, which might seem weird for somebody our age to be really good online. So talk a little bit about how you got here to this place where you are, I would say, the foremost expert in the world, and that is out of 8 billion, to help retiring baby boomers that do exactly what you said, the 50-plus folks, figure out their skills, learn how to get work, and turn it into money online. Talk us through how you got here.
Sure. So I went to school in Auburn, Alabama. My major was aerospace engineering. And as I was coming to the end of that time, the aerospace business completely fell apart. That was when, you know, NASA was, I mean, just everything kind of fell apart. You know, we got to the moon, and of course we haven't been back in, what is it, 50, 60 years, and all the energy threw out of that. So I got into technology companies. I started working for a variety of technology companies, most of which nobody would understand. They were in the what are called the real-time computer space. It's not data processing computers. It's the computers that operate radars and manufacturing lines and that kind of thing. So it was very interesting, you know, back in the 80s. And then I worked for this little company called Apple Computer. I went to work for them, I think it was in 1982, if I remember correctly. And they started in 1978. So they had just gone public when I went to work there, but were still, you know, very much a nascent company. They had, the Apple IIe, or the Apple II was their product. And just after I went there, they came out with the Apple II. And then while I was there, you know, the Apple III, the Apple IIe, those kind of products. So up through the Lisa and then the Macintosh. And then I went on into a more technical area, working for Sun Microsystems, which for many years was the leading provider of Unix servers. And that was all the, let's see, how would you describe it? That was the servers that drove the internet. That used to be our slogan, something like we're the dot in dot com. We were the glue that kind of linked everything together. And then worked with Oracle and Sun. I kind of ping-ponged back and forth. I think I worked four times at Sun and three times at Oracle. So the two companies were very tied together technology-wise. Sun was the hardware, and Oracle was the database software. And of course, Oracle's the second largest software company in the world behind Microsoft. So I every day was a fascinating day for me. I got to walk into people's facilities and learn all about what they did, and literally for decades. In fact, I was just writing an article today, and I tried to figure out when I was first exposed to artificial intelligence, because that's all the rage right now. And I think it was in about 1986 or 87 when I was at Sun, and there was a company in Southern California that was early on in all this, and they brought our hardware in and we had a project. And what they realized is, yeah, no, there's not enough horsepower in these computers yet to handle AI. But here we are, what, 40 years later, and we do have enough horsepower. So the cool thing is I got to see what a lot of people did behind closed doors from a technology standpoint. And it was like going to school every day.
So you've had a deep exposure to all that technology and growth. When did you decide you wanted to jump out of that corporate? Because all those are big companies. I mean, I think all or most of them are around today. I mean, Apple jumps in and out of being, yes, the largest company in the planet.
Right.
And so here's Winton now. At what point did you jump off and say you were going to freelance and then you were going to start a business? How did that happen?
Well, I jumped off about age 50. It might have been 51. And when you're in a corporate structure, if you get a little gray hair or your forehead starts growing through your hairline, like mine did, you don't get invited to as many meetings that are important. You don't get assigned the jobs that were fun, more fun and less drudgery. And, I could kind of see the writing on the wall. My last job was working for a software company. And of course we had the dot-com bomb in 2000, 2001 timeframe. And all of the software companies and all the hardware companies were downsizing. And my boss came in and said, the good news is you get to keep your job. The bad news is we're firing 3 out of every 4 people in your department, and you've got to keep up the pace with all those folks. And that's the point at which I decided if I was going to work for an idiot, it might as well be myself. And I took a long weekend, went home and thought about it, and decided that, I could probably figure out how to get health care. And, the rest, as they say, is history. And I started doing consulting work, which is synonymous really with freelancing. I mean, freelancing is consulting for the most part. Consulting is freelancing. And I did that, I've started in 2000. And so that's basically 23 years, more or less, by my count.
So you did that. You did it out of partly necessity, partly out of you didn't want to work for an idiot. So you went and you jumped in and created your own business. And that's an interesting story. Lots of people, we've been through that in 2008. There was the great real estate situation and tons and tons and tons of people lost their jobs. And we had COVID now, and maybe there was something in between. And everything keeps restructuring. The jobs don't come back the same. And the structures don't come back the same. And there's an intervening thing. In the COVID, it was this Zoom thing. Everybody can now be anywhere and do anywhere, and technology's amped up enough that works now, where it didn't work before. So what made you decide to start a business? Like, you were freelancing, doing consulting as an individual. What made you decide to start a company to help other people learn to consult or be freelancers?
Well, I actually had helped other people. I was using one of these online freelance networks early on, and I had already sort of built up a clientele, but other people along the way, people that I'd worked with, people that I knew or bump into, had asked me, how did you go out on your own? If you had to do it over again, how would you do it? And so I suggested that they go on to these online networks like Up or at Elance at the time. And then there was guru.com, and then Fiverr came along, and all these networks gave them the opportunity to work remotely. I mean, the big problem when you set out to freelance is you got to go find the jobs. And it used to be, and kind of the way I got started is I printed up some business cards and I went to some industry associations and handed them out and had a lot of awkward conversations with people about, have you got anything I can do for you? And, they called it the shoe leather approach to finding jobs. And so that's what I did. But as I saw these networks began building up, you tap into the network, all the jobs are neatly lined up. You tell the person that's got the job, here's what my qualifications are, your profile's online. And then you say what your approach to the job would be, and you tell them how much you would charge to do it. And it took all of that kabuki dance of going out and finding clients, it reduced it to that kind of conversation. And of course, those systems have been phenomenally successful. And we all know that there's a lot of freelancers out there. 44% of all adult Americans did some freelance work last year. So the numbers are huge on that front. And then this thing called the pandemic came along, and it taught everybody that, yes, adults can work remotely. And up until that came along, a lot of people, maybe about half of the people, thought, no, I can't really work from home. I mean, that just seems a little bit odd. And then, everybody got dumped into doing that for two and a half years. And so the point was proven. So today I have to have I spend a lot less time explaining what working portably is, but a little more time talking about the freelance opportunities and the kind of opportunities.
So when you say it takes the dance out and these networks are growing, and you said 44% of adults in the U.S. last year did some kind of freelancing, I'd like you to put, I know that you know all this stuff, put some numbers around it. How much money in the U.S. or North America or whatever your statistics will allow, how much money is in the freelance market this year, 2023? And if you have to estimate, go ahead. But I know you know some of this stuff.
Yeah, in the total freelance market, I think it's right at $1 trillion. I mean, in terms of ranking of industry, the construction, the ranking of freelance, if it were considered a single industry, just moved ahead of construction on the top 20 list of industries in the United States. So it's that big. Most people have no idea how big this stuff is.
So I want that to sink in to the people that are watching this. Freelancing as a monolithic industry, like plumbing or whatever, construction, it's all kinds of different construction, plumbing and housing and, architecture, all of it, construction. Freelancing is now a bigger industry than construction. Is that what you just told me?
Yes.
All right. So that's a staggering amount. So for someone that, freelancing, when I was growing up and you, there was some buddy that couldn't keep a job, a photojournalist or a writer or a photographer or something, right? And they went around.
Didn't get along well with others, typically.
Right, begging people, can I have some work? Will you buy my pictures or something like that? I want you to talk a little bit about destigmatizing this whole thing now, moving it from the nutcase that can't keep a job, that barely has a roof over his head, to a respectable and industry that's bigger than construction now.
Yes. Well, the early driving of the freelance industry back around the year 2000 was hiring programmers, because, of course, programmers for many decades prior, they loved to work on their own, and they loved, they did their best work a lot of times when they worked on their own. And that was sort of the immediate attraction, because programmers and good programmers were always scarce as hen's teeth throughout my career. So this gave a way to hire them. And that's where it started. It started in the programming area, then kind of technical people, build a website, that kind of thing. But over the intervening years, what I would call soft skills became more valuable. I mean, people realize that they, if they could write an article, if they could do proofreading, if they could make a PowerPoint, these kind of jobs started showing up on the networks. And, you know, pretty soon freelance buyers started showing up and saying, you mean I can buy somebody doing a PowerPoint? And when, if we don't have somebody on our staff that can do that, I can go off and hire him for just that slot of time. And that's what really pulled all the, what I would call the soft skills into it. And people that communicate is, has been a big factor in that. You know, a lot of people have, especially people 50 plus, have honed their communication style over the decades. They're good at explaining things. They're good at writing about things. They're good at all kinds of stuff from a communication and relationship standpoint that really puts them in good stead for being able to work with other people and especially work remotely. You know, the phrase that I say from time to time is it's not their first rodeo. You know, they've done this before.
So just for interest's sake and to surprise people, I want you to think for a minute about, I don't know, 5 or 10 or maybe more of surprising things, because I know in the programs that you have, you talk to people that are retired or getting ready to retire or planning to retire in the next 1, 2, 3, 5 years, or they've been retired and they're tired of sitting around doing nothing. They come to you from wildly different backgrounds with all kinds of experience in their lives, and you spend time with them picking all that apart and helping them realize which skills are valuable, and then showing them on these networks, yeah, there's work for that thing. So what are some of the weirdest that things, or not on weird, but unexpected stuff that you've seen?
Well, in the most people are this is unexpected, but proofreading is something that's in demand. And if you read things today, you would be surprised, because most of us that have an eye for that see lots of mistakes. But proofreading has been one of the easiest ways to get into these networks and do stuff. But the important thing about proofreading is the buyers, the freelance buyers, don't want to hire the world's best proofreader. They want to hire somebody that is a good proofreader that has knowledge of their environment, what they do, the business they're in. And I'll give you an example. There is one guy that came into our program, you know, and they buy our online training program, and they can't, we don't know what they did or what their age is. They just come in, and I wound up having a call with a guy, and he said he wanted to do proofreading, and he was making about $20 an hour, and he wasn't too happy with that, which, you know, $20 an hour is about $40,000 a year. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about your background. Turns out he was an orthopedic surgeon, and I suggested to him that he ought to be doing only medical proofreading, because that was paying at the time between $70 and $110 an hour. So this idea of combining your expertise with that, you know, skill set of proofreading, and then to put a finer point on it, there's a tool out there that maybe most people on the line have heard about called Grammarly. And Grammarly is, you know, it started out as kind of a spell checker on steroids, but it checked your grammar and it checked a few other things. And for us, Grammarly was one of the very first AI tools, because it started making suggestions about how you could write things differently and how you might approach different things from a structure standpoint in the document that you're working on. So we have people that are expert in their fields. They have these large domains of knowledge, and whether you're, you know, a pilot, a manufacturing manager, you know, an attorney, and you know, like you say, a plumber. There's one guy that was a plumber, and he said to me, "I'm tired of crawling around underneath buildings." You know, all my life, but I know all about plumbing. And he found work helping people manage their construction projects, their home remodels, or building a a house because he can do that remotely now. They can send them him videos of how the water's coming out of the faucet. He can hear gurgles in the drain if they hold the microphone down near the drain and, you know, provide him that feedback from afar and be sort of a somebody on your side when you're dealing with a general contractor or somebody that's doing extensive work on your home. So that's another area of taking your skills and turning them into, you know, something different. We have people that have become comedy writers, you know, that didn't really, you know, people told them they were a good writer, they were funny, that kind of thing. And there's a category on most of these networks called comedy writing. And some of the jobs are, you know, write me a motion picture. And those are bigger jobs, obviously. But some of them are write me a best man speech or write wedding vows. We have our Tuesday night meeting tonight, and we've got somebody wants a kind of a comedic. We profile a job every Tuesday night to give people an example of the wide range of jobs. There's a lot of jobs now on there for teaching people to do things. They want to be coached in English. And this is not so much teaching kids English. This is individuals that might be coming to the United States on a scholarship, college students. And in order to get their scholarship, they have to be proficient at a certain level in English. So one of our members tutored immigrating, you know, scholarship recipients prior to taking that test so that they would be able to pass the test. So there's just many different kinds of things that people can do. There's a lot of activity on article writing in general, but you see health articles, so people with a health background are able to do that kind of thing. There's a lot of advice giving. People want advice of one kind or another, where they might be in a career and they want to talk to somebody that's in that same career or has retired from that career that can give them some perspective. I know that one of the people that came into the program was a radiologist. They wanted nothing to do with radiology, but they liked the idea of coaching other radiologists in their beginning and mid-career. And that was something that he'd always enjoyed in his life. So lots of good things, you know, on the Upwork network, there's typically 200 to 300,000 open jobs every single day. And I'm always amazed. There was one person that I spoke to who was a historian that focused on the Amish. And we were talking one day and said, gee, do you think there'd be anything for somebody who has that narrow a focus? So we typed Amish into the search section and pulled up half a dozen jobs that were up for grabs that day that had to do with exactly what his background was and his knowledge was and that kind of thing.
So I want to repeat something you just said. 250,000 jobs a day. And you've just given a wildly diverse list of things that people wouldn't have necessarily thought about. And so how often does it happen that you interview someone or someone buys one of the programs that you have, and we'll talk about what those are in a minute. But someone buys one of your programs and their first comment is, well, I don't know what I do. I can't do this. Or, you know, I can't think of anything that I do. How often, what percentage of the time are people surprised after you work with them for an hour even about what is really and truly available for them right here, right now? How often does that happen?
Oh, it's 90% of the time. People come to this. The number one question we get is, what could I possibly do online? And it's creating this environment where they do outside the box thinking. There was a dentist that came to me at a conference I was speaking at in Ecuador, and he said, you know, I like the idea of what you're doing, because he'd seen me speak, but he said, I'm a dentist. What could I possibly do? And we had that conversation. Usually at a conference like that, it's about 10 or 15 minutes. But I said, well, do you know a lot about dentistry? And he said, yes. And would you be able to talk to people about alternative treatments for something they might be considering? You know, a lot of times you're in the dentist chair and you have the cotton in your mouth and the doctor says, so do you want to go ahead with extracting all your teeth? And you go, argh. And then he, you know, says, okay. And then you're doing it. But you want to get, you know, an independent validation, a different perspective on what might work. So I said, do you know about taking care of dental injuries? Oh, sure. Do you know, you know, so he wound up writing some articles on taking care of dental injuries, the common injuries that are going to occur when you're playing baseball, the common injuries that are going to occur when you're camping, the common injuries that are going to happen when you're traveling. Like I bit down on a Tic Tac coming into Munich, Germany, just a few years ago on my way to Thailand, and a tooth cracked in half, you know, never happened in my life. And so, you know, what do you do? Where do you go? And having somebody to talk to in your own language, explain what happened and say, what should I be doing? Help me figure out what my next step was. And when I got to Thailand, I went to a dentist and knew what to do.
So I want to know, and I'm going to switch topics completely here.
Sure.
You could, like, you created a successful freelance career. You did the shoe leather approach, and then you did the network approach, and you got jobs doing the things that you love to do, which at the time was technology. Then you got requests to help other people who said, "You, gee, how'd you do that? Tell me what you did." What is it in Winton's heart? Like, what is there about you personally that makes you, like, as I watch you describe this, you're animated, you're excited. You know, I've seen you before at different times. What is it inside of you that makes this, helping all these people who don't know what they could do, who might be fearful, who might be worried about whether they, you know, are going to be okay or be interested or be left behind or whatever? Why is that important to Winton?
That's a good question. I think just by sort of looking at my history, I have always enjoyed helping people understand how to take new technology and apply it so they get good things out of it. And when I first got into the technology business, I saw a lot of technology being sold, but people not getting full value out of it, you know, or even partial value out of it. In fact, one of the very first jobs I had in the computer industry, I took over from what they would call a dormant sales territory. And the previous salesperson had sold a number of computers to these basically engineering types in this huge installation, millions of dollars worth of computers, actually, that, you know, but maybe in the end, a dozen computers, because they were very expensive computers. But he failed to get the right cables to hook them all up properly. So when I went in thinking I'm this freshly minted sales guy selling computers and went to talk to them about, hey, do you want to upgrade that unit you have? They would say, no, we never got the one we got working because the damn salesperson sold us the computer and never got us the cables to make sure we could plug it in and operate the computers together properly. And so that's when my first exposure to people being terrifically dissatisfied with doing that. And I took it as my mission to satisfy every single one of those people. And that's where I really experienced the joy, because, you know, I had a lot of tough meetings with the people that I was working with on this that had the computers with no cables. But after, you know, the problem got a lot better after 3 months, and then even better after 6 months, and better after 9 months, to those people became my biggest advocates for our products in that very large facility. So I think, and then the experience at Apple, I mean, everybody knew the magic of Apple, but when I went to Apple, I would walk into a bank, and I was in a business development role, headquarters of a major bank, and, you know, one out of 200 people had a computer on their desk. Computers just were not always on the desk. Now you can't even imagine walking into even a home without a computer on a desk, much less an office. And people were so enthralled with this technology and wanted to know how it could work and could it do this and could I hook my wire from the satellite and take it over here and do this. And I said, let's just start with doing a spreadsheet, because there were huge gains in productivity just by using an online spreadsheet. And that was the application that really gave people a feel for how to use this technology. Most people, like is going on with AI and robotics right now, they see the glitzy news stories and that kind of thing, and they want, you know, to buy a robot to do all their housekeeping and meal cooking in their home. And we're quite a ways away from that kind of thing. They, in a funny sort of way, they overproject technology from where it is now. And what I knew part of the secret was, is picking something simple that provided a high payoff challenge. And if I could bring that pilot project together and demonstrate to them how all this was going to work, then usually they could build on that base and go forward. And that's exactly what we do with 50 plus and baby boomers that are making this transition, is we get them started small. It's like, you know, taking small bites, but then moving up once they get a level of comfort. The wrong way to do it is to throw them into the deep end and say swim, you know, and that's what doesn't work.
So let's get right to your product and services. So this guy behind me in the chair, let's say he's coming to you. I don't know why he's got a computer on the beach if he hasn't already been, but tell us all about what you do now, everything you offer, how you serve these people, all of it.
Yes. Well, we have our core product, which is 21 Days to Your Freelancing Success. And that is our flagship product. It's been around for 13 years. And that walks you through all the things that we teach getting set up on one of these job and project networks. To complement that product, we have a Tuesday night call that I'm doing actually right after this call, where we do additional training, answer questions. We talk about problems people encounter, strategies for taking certain skills and moving in a direction and that kind of thing. So that's our main thrust. Then we have several other training programs. And about 3 years into this, people kept asking me, do you coach on this stuff? And they'd say, listen, I'm a, you know, I'm a, what we call the white collar worker back then. They're making $80,000, $120,000 a year. They say, I don't have time to sit down and figure this out from an online course. I want a coach to help me with that. So we began certifying coaches, and now we have a robust group of independent coaches that can help walk through this this process. So it's very about 80 to 85% of the people do it through the online training course and the Tuesday night call. The balance go through coaching and use coaching to help them get started, especially people that have eclectic backgrounds where they've done a series of different things. Coaching tends to be better for those. We have products that one of the most in-demand skills is research. So we have a product based on research. We have a product based on, you know, how to get started doing proofreading, editing, and writing, because that's where a lot of people start. And so those are the basic products, if you will, and then the support of coaching and the Tuesday night call and our ongoing membership. When you buy one of our products, you get typically a 1-year membership in our Tuesday night call and our program. And then you renew that year after year if you decide to. And, you know, we've got quite the community going around that. And we have a Facebook, private Facebook group, and coaches are in there talking to people. New freelancers ask questions, and sometimes freelancers that came into our program 6-8 months ago answer the questions. I mean, or 6-8 years ago, sorry. And there's just a lot of good sharing of information, celebrating successes. You know, the first job freelancing on one of these networks is the hardest one you're going to get. And so everything we do is help you get that first job and actually getting about those first 6 jobs. And we teach people how to get jobs that only take an hour or two to do and get a really good rating. Like, you know, everything gets rated now 1 to 5 stars. And that's what we want to do to get you into the freelance network and to kind of prime the algorithm to say, hey, this person's done 6 jobs and they're rocking a 4.3 star rating. They're pretty good. We're going to let them out and see all the jobs that are out there rather than kind of restricting what you're seeing and that kind of thing.
So what I'm hearing is you have a whole community of how many thousand?
It's about 12,000 right now.
So you have a gigantic community of 12,000 people who have been through your products, some of one or more of the products, that have learned something about freelancing, that have explored that. They belong to a membership kind of program where they get extra help. They have weekly calls, and you, Winton, have put all this together in service of your desire to help people. What? Like, you're doing this enormous amount of work. Yeah, you get paid. Yeah, you sell your products, et cetera, et cetera. But you do a lot of work, and the reason is?
The reason is it's wonderful to have that portable income freedom. I mean, the thing that I didn't want to do is travel a lot, make a lot of meetings. You know, about half the meetings were very enjoyable and half of them were terrible. It's just because I know what I went through when I started my business, the freedom I had over my own schedule, the freedom to pick which clients I was going to work with, the freedom to set up my schedule the way I wanted to. And if I wanted to take an afternoon off and go to my daughter's softball game, I could do that. You know, it's just a completely different thing. And now the rest of the world discovered that during the pandemic, that idea of having control over your own schedule, not having to have a whole wardrobe for business, not having to have an extra car, not having to fill up an extra car with gasoline, not having to battle freeways. You know, once you get off that train, you know, we're all sort of in a trance when they're doing that. I mean, I did the dance up and down the 405 in Los Angeles. And once you sort of break the trance, there's just a relaxation that comes over you. And this whole idea of self-direction is a very powerful thing. Very subtle, but very powerful.
So tell us where we can find out more. So what I hear you've got this super valuable thing. In one sense, 12,000 is a big number. In another sense, 12,000 is a tiny number in terms of the possibilities, $1 trillion and everything else. So where can people find out all about the help, the service, the products, and everything else about your stuff?
Sure. They can go to barefootconsultants with an S on the end .com. And it's all there. How to contact us, what our products are, what they do, what our courses are, what our coaching certification is all about, that kind of thing. and quite a few free articles on the site just to give you an idea of what this whole world of freelancing looks like.
I don't know anyone that creates more stuff and gives away more stuff than you do. And that's, and I know a lot of people that do a lot of stuff. So
yes, I know you do.
Yeah. So barefootconsultants.com.
Yes.
What I'd like to ask you, we just got a few minutes left. What did the pandemic do? You know, there's multiple parts to that question, but rather than ask them, I'm just going to say, yes. Gee, what did the pandemic do?
Well, it pushed number one thing it did is it pushed everybody to work remotely. And in order to do that, the technology had to level up. And, you know, the number one application that comes to mind in that is Zoom. And Zoom is, you know, if you said, I use Zoom a month before the pandemic, most people would look at you like, what the heck is that? But, you know, now we all know what Zoom is in because we've had office meetings, conferences, birthday parties, nights out on Zoom, you know, through the pandemic. So, you know, that's what it did. The other thing is it gave individuals the confidence that they could work from home and not be completely distracted by other things going on at home. They had to figure out how to do that. And that's some of the stuff we talk about in our program, because you can't, you know, do all this off the dining room table if there's kids running through it every 4 minutes, you know, and so there's some things to pay attention to there. And the other thing the pandemic did is it caused people to look at how much of my time am I spending doing, you know, non-peak activities. And so by way of example, it's, I get up in the morning, I shower, I put on my wardrobe, I get in my car and I drive, you know, in the US, I think the average commute's about a half hour each way. So I spend an hour doing that. I go to meetings in the company that I'm in or organization, whatever it might be, nonprofit, and about half of them are good and half of them are bad. So a lot of time gets wasted in those. A lot of time gets wasted in the office chit-chat and gossip. And that's the big revelation. When people started working at home, actual productivity measures were much higher for people working at home, because the thought of the people that conducted these surveys are that people didn't have those distractions going on. So that's, you know, in brief, what the pandemic did. It also reinforced the idea that there's probably nothing more productive and creative than getting all the stakeholders in a physical room and having a good meeting, whether it be a brainstorming session or a conference or that kind of thing. But it really said we don't all need to be in the room as much. And I talked to a lot of our members who say their, you know, their organizations have gone back to work and their offices are open and all that kind of stuff, but they're only working 1 or 2 days a week in the office and the rest they're able to work from home. So there's been this kind of recalibrating of, you know, what's the value of being in the office versus the actual cost to all parties involved. And there's an interesting stat out that it takes about, cost about $24,000 a year to house a single employee in an office building. And this is the other thing that many corporations have realized, is that they don't need the Manhattan skyscrapers anymore if everybody's going to live in the countryside in New Jersey and Connecticut and that kind of thing and commute in or telecommute in.
Yeah, so we're just about done here. Want to find out. Last thoughts.
Yes.
People that are wondering if they can do it or worried or if they're too old or too young or whatever. What is your last thought to help people understand whatever it is you think they ought to know to create their own ultimate life?
Yes. So, no, you're not too young or too old. You know, we work best with people that are 50 plus, because our work counts on us being able to help them extract, help them really remember who they are and put that into a format that makes sense to buyers on these networks. So that's one thing that I'd like to leave people with is, yes, there is opportunity. I can't tell you how many people said, you know, I don't think there's anything in there for me. I don't think I can do this. And then we get emails from them or they, you know, leave different reviews on various pages around the internet and say, you know, it just changed my life. I mean, that is the gratifying thing. When somebody says it changed my life, I reduced my my stress level went down. And in a lot of our people, you know, like to do this international traveling, kind of the digital nomad thing. And that's another thing that just is a real positive counterbalance in your life in terms of keeping you switched on and focused and that kind of thing.
Winton, I want to thank you for sharing all your wisdom, your knowledge, your beautiful temperament, the desire you have to help people. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you a bunch, Kellen.
You're welcome. So I want you each to take a chance to listen to this. I happen to have known Winton for some years. I can tell you there's nobody better at helping you learn what your skills are. There's nobody better at helping you learn to monetize them, to figure out where the jobs are. And I've seen just amazing things that he's helped people do. So no matter what you're doing right now, you can create with your own skills, your own background, and your own individual circumstances your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.